Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, May 14th, 2016. This is episode 1287. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost, automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/TechGuy and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/TechGuy. And by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of Super Tank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to learn more. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and we are going to talk tech. Computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, virtual reality headgear. I just added that one. Anything in between. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. Well, you just call via Skype. And since it's a toll free number, won't cost you anything. And Bob's your uncle, as they say. Whatever that means. Bob's your uncle. You're on the show. So Apple admits maybe there is a problem. I don't know. Could be. We're looking into it. Did we talk last week? I think we did, about the crisis with Apple and iTunes. Apple says if there is something going on, it's very rare. I think that's probably the case. You'd hear a lot more calls on here. iTunes deleted my music. But it started, as I mentioned last week, with a blog post by a designer who said, Apple deleted my files after uploading them to the cloud. They said, oh, you don't need these anymore, and they're gone. And he said a lot of those files, Apple didn't match properly. That's not surprising. That happens a lot. And so the files they uploaded to the cloud weren't the ones I had, and now the ones I had are gone. And a lot of people, especially the Apple fan press, there is a subcategory of technology reporting called the Apple fan press, said, oh, could must be the user error. See, I'm always hesitant to blame the user on this stuff. Could be, of course. We make mistakes, we users. And Apple makes it easy to make a mistake because the dialog boxes can be very confusing. I know I've deleted photos trying to use Apple's photos. It's corrupted databases, all sorts of problems. I stopped using Apple photos. I have at least one friend who stopped using Apple Music for the same reason. But everybody, Apple fan press said, blame the user. I said, nah, that's so fast. Let's wait. Let's see. It could be a bug. Let's see. It could be a user error. I've mentioned this before. There's among IT professionals who have a kind of a dim view of their users. They're kind of like, you know, law enforcement officers. You see the worst side of people. And so as a result, they have a low opinion. They say the problem exists between, what is it, between chair and keyboard, PEBCAC, P-E-B-C-A-C. Let me think, what's between the chair and the keyboard? Oh, me. Oh, it's me? It's my fault? That's what you're saying? Yeah, it's a PEBCAC problem. But after having done this for a little while, long time, I've started to come to the opinion. In fact, I've said this, my motto for years, it's not your fault. Either the computer did something unexpected, or it's the designer's fault for making it easy to make a mistake, you know? And I think one of those is for sure true in this case. But Apple says, well, just in case, we're going to fix iTunes next week. That sounds like maybe there might be a problem. James Pinkstone published his blog post that said, Apple stole my music. No, seriously. And he says 122 gigabytes of music suddenly disappeared. Apple says, look, we didn't do that on purpose. It's certainly not, and I think everybody agrees, this is not how it's supposed to work. This is Apple's statement. And they called Pinkstone, by the way. Had a nice talk with him. Nice chat. And they came back with this. In an extremely small number of cases, users have reported that music files saved on their computer were removed without their permission. We are taking these reports seriously. We know how important music is to our customers. Our teams are focused on identifying the cause. We have not been able to reproduce this issue. Usually, that's the first thing you need to do. If you're going to fix a bug, you need to be able to reproduce it in the lab. Say, well, what are the steps? Oh, if it happens, that's definitely a bug, but they can't reproduce it. But we are, this I find is a little strange, releasing an update to iTunes next week, which includes additional safeguards. Sounds like they might have some idea of what happened. How could you fix it if you didn't know what happened? If a user experiences this issue, they should contact AppleCare. You know, the real problem, and I'll just say this, we don't know what's going on. Apple's, of course, not telling us. The real problem is this, I think, is mixing iTunes Match, which I use. Remember that was the feature that Apple sold for $25 a year, would match all your music, and should you ask it to replace low-quality, copy-protected music with high-quality, unprotected music, even if you bought it in the iTunes store. That was a good deal. I called it Apple's Amnesty Program because essentially what they did is say, hey, if you've got pirated music, we'll replace it with legit music. I think, of course, the music industry knew they were doing this. And I think the music industry got its share of the $25 and said, well, better to get something than nothing. Because if you, I'm not saying me, but somebody, if a person should happen to have many, well, let's say 32 gigabytes of music that he or she downloaded from Napster over the years, back when Napster was still around illegally, well, it would be a nice thing if you could pay $25 and then iTunes would replace all that, you know, low-quality 128-bit poorly digitized music with high-quality official 256 kilobit AAC files. That would be a very nice thing. I'm not saying I know who would do that kind of thing, but maybe somebody would. And then, you know, your library is now suddenly washed clean. It's like baptized in the river of Apple and washed clean of its sin. And you can go forward with your head held high that all my music is legitimate now. So that was a good thing. And by the way, Apple still offers that, but they also offer Apple Music. And Apple Music does something kind of similar, but not the same. And it's very confusing. And I think this is where the problem lies. And Apple never really explained how the two interrelated and what functions of one would replace functions of the other. They never did. And so my advice is use one or the other. Don't use iTunes Match and Apple Music. Use one or the other. It's the two together that seems kind of problematic. So a survey, yeah, I know, I'm not a big fan of surveys, but this one is just from a fairly reliable source, the U.S. Department of Commerce. They surveyed 41,000 American households about online activity in the last few months. The agency, under the domain of the National Telecommunications and Information Administration, said that 45% of online households had stopped doing financial transactions online or buying goods and services online or posting on social media online or expressed controversial opinions online. Have you done that? 45% of Americans stopped doing one or all of those. 30% had refrained from at least two. 29% said they avoid financial transactions online. 26%, that's a lot, said avoided buying goods or services online. It's more than a quarter of us won't buy online. 26% avoided social networks. 19% said they wouldn't express controversial opinions online because of privacy concerns. 63% were worried about identity theft. 18% data collection by the government. And this is the one that scared me. 19%, one in five American households has been affected by an online security breach in the last year. 19 million American households. Wow. Wow. Let's talk high tech. We spend a lot of time telling you how to secure your stuff online because you want to be able to shop online. That's good stuff. We can talk about that. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Stoic Squirrel says, I think people should stop expressing controversial opinions online. Darn it. This is a tweet from Mark Kawano, his two-year-old. She says, Alexa, play Old MacDonald at a farm. She's talking to a light, a lamp, a lawn. She's using the wrong keyword. It's Echo. Play Old MacDonald Had a Farm.
Old MacDonald Had a Farm by a company. Bob, David, Louise from Prime Music.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, this is nice. Boy, you know when your studio engineer likes you. When he gives you a little multicolored bouquet of USB cables. This is cool. You can carry this around. From JASTEK. Did you get it on Amazon?
Yeah.
Yeah. JASTEK. So it has, on one end, it's got, you know, your USB connector for your laptop or your charger. And then it's got multicolored lightning and USB-C and two micro USBs. That is great. Man, would you be impressed if you were dating a guy that had these in his man
had
bag?
I known, I would have gotten you that. They look like a bunch of slap bracelets.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's like a bouquet. That was a little bouquet. Hello, Heather Hammond.
Hello.
Phone Ranger. Feels like I haven't seen you in ages. Welcome back.
It does have that feel.
We missed you.
Oh, thanks.
You've been lining up calls. Should we go
how to do my job.
You know how to do it, girlfriend. No one's better than Heather.
Woo-hoo.
She's the Phone Ranger. So who would thou have me select for today's first call?
Well, Connie is looking stunning over there in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, and she's having some of those iTunes issues you were just discussing.
Is it just me, or every time you hear Chippewa Falls, do you think of Rocky and Bullwinkle? Let me ask Connie. Aren't Rocky and Bullwinkle from Chippewa Falls?
No. I don't know.
No, I think they're from some other kind of falls. Hello, Bonnie. Or Connie. Connie, sorry. Hi, Connie.
Hi, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Okay. I have a WD, 1 terabyte storage, and I plug it into my new computer, and I have downloaded iTunes, have it all set up, ready to go. So I tell it to transfer my iTunes file into iTunes, and lo and behold, all my music is there. Everything is good to go. I unplug my WD thinking that I'm golden, and I click on a song.
Disappears!
And no, I get the little exclamation point that says, would you like to locate the file?
Yeah.
Well,
it's still on the WD. Do you want to have it locally? Obviously, you do. You want to be able to disconnect the drive. So all the music's on the drive. So that's an iTunes preference.
Okay.
And what you want iTunes to do is organize your library for you. So if you go into the preferences of an iTunes, there's an advanced preference pane.
Okay.
And in the advanced preference pane, there's a couple of checkboxes you got to pay attention to. So first of all, look at where your iTunes media folder is located. You want that to be on your internal hard drive, not the WD. So it may be that your iTunes library is on the WD. So you want to move it. And you can actually change it if you wish.
Okay.
So there's a change button. Or press the reset button. Because the normal place, is it a Mac or Windows?
Windows.
Yeah. A normal place a Windows would keep it would be in the My Music folder. So I think if you press reset, it will say, oh, you mean you want to relocate it to the C drive? That's in case. It may not be there because there's a box below it that says keep iTunes media folder organized. And what that will, and then under that, copy files to iTunes media folder when adding the library. So,
okay.
What you can do is have a mess of files not even organized on your Western Digital drive, your external drive.
Right.
Make sure your iTunes media location is on your C drive, your internal drive, and then check those two boxes. Keep iTunes media folder organized, and the most important one is copy files to iTunes media folder when adding a library. That probably was unchecked. So what it did is it built a media library knowing that your files were on the Western Digital, and it said, that's fine, you can keep, because you can keep them there if you want.
Right.
But you
right.
don't want to.
No.
Yeah. So that's what I would do, and check those boxes, and you might have to re-import the music from the Western Digital. That's fine.
That's okay.
Yeah. Do keep them on the Western Digital. Don't erase anything.
No. But I mean, in my computer, I will erase the music I already put in there, because otherwise I'm going to get duplicates and triplicates.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, if you re-import them, you might. Yeah, you don't want
re-import
that.
Re-import them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, just as long as you have copies. Everything was on the Western Digital?
Yes.
Okay. Make sure, because you don't want to be like these guys who say, hey, iTunes deleted my music. You see how easy it would be to accidentally do something that would make it look like, you know, something that Apple did something. It'd be so easy. Because
yeah.
it's confusing.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Well, I'm glad you called.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call, and it's been awesome talking with
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Connie. And it's Frostbite Falls that Rocky and Bullwinkle live in, not Chippewa yeah. Falls. Everyone
well,
should.
We have Leinenkugel beer.
Oh, that sounds good. Whatever that is, I want some.
We're the home of the Big Eddy Spring.
Oh man, I'm coming. I'm on my way. Do you have Bavarian pretzels too?
Oh yes, at the fair.
At the fair, dipped in butter. I'm there.
Yes.
I'm on my way. Beer and pretzels. That's all I need.
Okay. See you soon.
Thank you, Connie. Take care. Get some Oompa-pa music on your iTunes library for me now. And a one and a two. We're gonna play some Oompa-pa. Love that. John and Tustin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I have need to buy a kind of a point and shoot camera that can do video well in low light.
Oh yes.
So here's what happened to me in 2014. I was coming into New York Harbor on the Queen Mary 2 with my little Moto X.
Yeah.
Which I love, and I was taking video of us going under the Verrazano Narrows Bridge.
Yeah.
And it was 5:15 in the morning. It was still rather dark. And the video came out all kind of jumpy. It wasn't smooth, you know?
Yeah.
And then going by the Statue of Liberty, which is all lit up at night, it just came out a white blob.
Yeah. Smartphone. Oh, you used a smartphone, a Moto X. They're not known for their low-light capabilities. I mean, they're getting better. For instance, the new Galaxy S7 and the HTC 10, these are both Android phones, now have...
I'd rather just have a...
Yeah, get a good camera. It's always going to be better.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons is the phone doesn't have much room for the pickup chip, right? It's just a little tiny thing, smaller than your pinky nail.
Right.
The bigger the chip, there are a couple of things that improve low-light digital photography. One is chip size. More chip means you can take more light. That makes sense, right?
Uh-huh.
So the full-frame sensors, the 35-millimeter sensors, are the best at low light. And as you get smaller, they get worse. But also how wide the aperture can get, the opening, of course. That means a lower – it's weird because it's an inverse number. So it's a lower number. F-stop means more light gets in. And then –
well, you know, I bought a GoPro last year. I was going off to Sumatra, Malaysia, and
they're pretty good.
I don't like it. It's too wide angle.
Yes, that's right.
The horizons are curved.
It's curvy.
You know? So I want to get rid of it. I don't like it. You know?
So I would say it depends on your budget, of course. I mean, the best point and shoot low light, and the ones I really love are from Sony. These are the RX100 cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And they do incredibly well. Now, they're up to Mark IV on those, but you can get one of the early Mark 1, 2s, or 3s for less. These RX100s are probably the best low light if you can afford them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I ran out of time there, John, but RX, there's a good review on a DP review of the latest version, the RX100 mm-hmm. Mark IV. This is a one-inch chip. It's one of the reasons they give you such good low-light performance. It's a big, right. But that's $1,000. That might be a little beyond your budget.
Yeah, I was going to spend $400 or $500.
Well, you can get an earlier one. I bet you, if you look around, you can find the Mark III or the Mark II at that price. Okay. This is an f1.8 camera with a one-inch sensor. Plus, Sony does magic with low light. They're the best. Mm-hmm. They're the best at that. So this is an excellent. I've taken pictures at concerts, which are really challenging lighting. Even though they have stage lighting, it's challenging, and the pictures come out wonderfully. Are you going on a trip?
Well, I'm going back to England, and I'm coming back on the Queen Mary.
Oh, I'm so jealous! I'm so jealous.
It's awesome. It really is.
Oh, man. I was on the Queen Mary 1 as a kid in 1967.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now that's the one in Long Beach now.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget it. And I've wanted to go on Cunard again. I haven't ever since, but I would love to. I'm jealous.
It's awesome. I did the Panama Canal on the Queen Victoria in January of this year.
Oh.
Westbound from Florida to Los Angeles. It was awesome.
Here's the RX100B for $498. On Amazon. I'm not sure which version this is, but this is the same, you know, f1.8 lens. It's a really good camera. I think you'd be so happy. And it's very compact.
Good.
It's a really good travel camera. I mean, these are like the kind of cameras pros might carry in addition to their fancy camera, you know, just so they have a pocket camera. So that's why they're so expensive.
Yeah. All right, I think I'll do that.
Yeah, I highly recommend
these. Coming into New York Harbor is probably one of the most awesome experiences. You know, it harkens back to the 19th century and all the immigrants coming.
Oh, absolutely. Bring me your poor, your tired, your huddled masses yearning to be free. Oh, I'd love to do that someday. We did it when I was a kid. We sailed out of New York City on the SS United States, and we sailed back on the old Queen Mary.
So you know the story about the SS United States.
Well, they're trying to save her, right?
It's in Philadelphia, and one of the cruise lines, Crystal Cruise Lines, has bought an option to spend $800 million on it and refurbish it and put it back to sea.
Oh, I love Crystal. I would be on that one in a heartbeat. It's a beautiful ship, but it's in pretty bad shape. They're going to have to spend a lot of money.
They're going to spend $800 million.
Yeah, that's almost ship costs.
It holds the fastest Atlantic crossing record.
Right. It was marvelous. We sailed on it at its heyday in 67.
I sailed on the SS America in 1960.
Yeah.
I came back from England on the SS America.
But see, that's what it gets in your blood, doesn't it? And then ever since, that I can't stop getting on boats. But I would love, I still have to visit the Queen Mary in Long Beach. I would love to do that.
I've been there several times.
So you like Cunard?
Oh, yeah, I think they're great.
And I'd love to do a transatlantic. That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah, my wife gets seasick, though. I have to get her the patch.
Yeah, she'll be fine. You know, they have stabilization on them.
I know. Yeah, it's pretty amazing, yeah. Hey, it's good to talk to you. Have a wonderful trip. I think you'll like that camera a lot.
All right, Leo, thank you.
Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Wow, Crystal's gonna buy her? There's no way. That's just nostalgic because that ship is so old and it's a beautiful ship. I remember those stacks. That's what she looked like when I sailed on her. Beautiful ship. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Normally Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy, would join us. He's a little under the weather. He'll be back next week to talk home theater. I could take home theater questions. I'm a home theater buff, not the expert Scott Wilkinson is. But I've listened to Scott enough, and I've spent enough money on Scott's suggestions that I might have some expertise in that area. 888-827-5536 is the phone number. I found, so the camera that I recommended for our previous caller, the Sony RX100 Mark IV, is $1,000 list. Although you can shop around and get it for less, obviously. But I found its older brother on Amazon, the RX100/B, for $498. That seems a lot for a point and shoot, and it is. I mean, you can get a pretty competent one for $250-$300 now. But the what you get for the extra couple of $100 is really good low light performance. It is it's a beautiful, beautiful camera. Point and shoot's never going to be quite as good as the bigger cameras with bigger sensors. That's where you get the best low light photography I know of is also from Sony, and a similar chip. It's the Sony A7S. That's their low light champ. And man, that thing, you could take a picture with one candlelight. Moonlight picture, and it looks great. What you give up on digital when the light goes down is it gets grainy. So this is how, what happens is that there's three different ways you can adjust, really four if you include the sensors, you could adjust for light. A good sensor with big pixels can pick up a lot of light. So that's kind of hardware. Then there are settings. You know, you can open up the lens, get a wide aperture. That means a lower number. In fact, you can get lenses now that are F1 or F.9. They're very expensive, very big, lots of glass. They look like giant eyeballs because they're letting in so much light. Typical camera, your point and shoots, around F2. And we're starting to see camera phones now. As I mentioned, the S7 and the HTC 10 at F1.8, which is pretty fast. Pretty fast. The other way you could do it, of course, is by slowing down the shutter speed, but that's why you get the blurry, right? You get the shutter speed too low, you can't hold it steady, and anything that's moving in the picture is going to be blurry. That means open the shutter for longer. You know, you open it for 10 seconds, more light gets in. The whole idea is how can we gather more light? But sometimes people do that with the time lapse. You know, you put it on a tripod, you hold it very still. A lot of times they don't even press the camera button. They have a trigger release, so they don't jiggle the camera at all. And then typically you'll aim it at something's not moving. You know, maybe if it's at night, you get street, you know, lights from the cars going by and look like streaks. Or you aim it at the night sky and the stars look like star paths because the stars are moving. So you get this star path. Those are, you know, anywhere from a few seconds to minutes to, I guess, even hours. And then the third way you can do it is by amplifying the image, amplifying the light. And that's the ISO setting. And all cameras have an ISO setting. Usually you don't mess with it, but you can see. And, you know, film, when you bought it in the old days, you'd have the film had a fixed ISO. This is how sensitive the film is. But on a camera, you could turn the ISO up. But the higher you get past 6, 7, 8,000 ISO, pretty soon you're going to start looking pretty grainy. Like, you know, one of those pictures that the private eye takes and he's following you around late at night. Those grainy, grainy pictures. So there's a trade-off in every respect, you know, for getting a faster picture. But good cameras now are getting pretty good. Digital's always been bad at low light, but they're getting a lot better. Your camera phone, better, but not very good because the sensor's so small. 8888 Ask Leo. On we go with the show. Tim in Moore Park, California. Hi, Tim.
I love you, Leo. I'm Tim Kalamkarian. I want anonymous free email like Proton Mail. You told me Proton Mail the last time, but they want me to give them an email so they can email me back the password or something.
That's not good. What good is that?
I don't
want to
give them an email.
That's not, yeah, because then they have your name, right?
Right.
Proton Mail is the big one. They're based in Switzerland.
Right.
So the idea is that, you know, oh, well, at least the U.S. authorities can't get the information. But you know what? Switzerland's not Mars. They're a country. They give up information, you know. It's a little safer in Switzerland. But, yeah, the idea is if the provider knows nothing about you, there's nothing they can give up.
Right.
However, I got to point out that you would then also have to be careful about how you connect to the provider. For instance, every time you connect to any website, your IP address is visible, and that's unique to you.
The public library.
There you go. So they'd know you were at the library. Or you could use a service, a VPN service, or even Tor, and obscure that information. So that's one way to do it. Yeah, Proton Mail, they ask for an email address.
They want me to, they said, we're really full right now. Give us your email and email back when we get a new thing opened up.
Well, there's a one that's been around forever. Phil Zimmerman, the guy who invented PGP encryption, pretty good privacy. That's the gold standard for email encryption, has worked with them. They're called Hushmail.
Okay.
Hushmail.com. And it's not a free service. So, well, you'd have to figure out how to pay them anonymously. But there's ways to do that. You know? I don't think it's free. Let me look and see. Yeah,
I thought it was free. I've been to their site.
Maybe the Hushmail for personal use is free. Yeah, I guess you're right.
But I think you have to sign in every week or 3 weeks or something.
Yeah, I mean, I think with some effort, you could create an anonymous, say, Gmail account at the library and then use that to sign up for Proton Mail. Because the Gmail doesn't require any personal information. They only know your IP address. So if you're using it at the library,
right,
there you go.
I do everything at the library.
Yeah, so if you really, you're one of those 19% of those people who says, I'm not going to do anything online unless I'm very careful.
Well, I turned off my wife's computer. I turned the off button off because the little thing was going around.
Yeah.
And it burned up the hard drive, so now I have to go to the library because she won't let me use her computer anymore.
Don't blame her. Oh, you're in the doghouse now. How is that couch? Nice and comfy? So
it's anonymous at the library.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
so it's better.
You're more anonymous. Yeah, although you know, if somebody really, here's the problem. We're walking down the street in New York City, my wife and I, a couple months ago, and you really feel anonymous. Here you are in the biggest city in America, one of the biggest cities in the world, and you feel anonymous. Why? Because you're surrounded by people who couldn't care less, right? You are sort of anonymous. And the truth is, the internet's an even bigger city, and you are anonymous unless somebody cares about you and wants to find out about you. And then all bets are off. You can use Proton Mail and Hush Mail and work from the library and blah, blah, blah. But if somebody really wants to find out about you, is highly motivated, it's pretty hard to use the internet and stay secure. It's pretty hard. So most of us, I don't, saying I have nothing to hide or you shouldn't worry unless you have something to hide, that's not fair because everybody has something to hide. You're not going to let the government put a camera in your bathroom. Everybody deserves privacy. It's absolutely a human right. But sometimes privacy through obscurity is the best we can hope for. And then do a few things to make it difficult. I think Proton Mail's fine, if that's what you want. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The point really being is, yes, of course, security through obscurity is not a solution, but nothing is a complete solution. So, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Let me talk to you about something serious for a moment. You young people, you listen up here. You got to save for your old age. Well, there's a lot of things to save for. Kids going to college someday, you got to save for that. Oh, that's expensive. You got to save. Maybe you're saving up for a down payment on your first house. Long-term savings, very important. You should be putting a little bit aside every month. But the question is, what do you do? Where do you put it? Do you put it in a savings account? No. Not just temporarily, maybe. But the interest rates on savings accounts are so low, it's like you're paying them to store your money. Nah, you might as well put it in the mattress. So let's not do that. So you're going to invest, right? Yeah, I got the books. I thought I'd do that. I got all the books. I read it up. I said, I'm going to do this myself because I'm a smart guy. I can figure this out. I put all the money in, bought all the right things, did it all very carefully, and then forgot about it for about 10 years. And then I checked and I realized, I should probably have been paying closer attention. So, okay, I've got a better idea. You're going to hire an investment advisor. Good luck. First of all, a lot of these guys don't really know what they're doing. Second of all, they take a big chunk. Not only like 1 to 2 to 3% of the money you have managed a year as their fee, but then they got all these, you know, hidden fees, transaction costs, and all these hidden fees. By that time, you got to earn, you know, twice as much just to get ahead. So this is why I use, and actually I can't use, but I would use, people I know use, Wealthfront. FCC regulations prohibit me from using Wealthfront and doing the ads because, you know, financial companies can't have, you know, customers do their ads. But I can tell you, I'm hearing from lots of people who've chosen Wealthfront from our audience who say, this is awesome. So what is Wealthfront? All right, well, it's they're going to manage it for you. But unlike a traditional investment advisor, they're not going to manage your investment by checking every 6 months or 4 months or 3 months or every week even. They check all the time because it's programmatic. It's software. Software based on Nobel Prize winning academic research, the best investment practices from some of the smartest minds. And because it's software, you know, computers work cheap. They don't charge you 1 or 2 or 3% of what they manage. They charge you 0.25% a year, practically nothing. And there are never any additional fees. You can get started with as little as $500. But what I want you to do is first read about it. Go to wealthfront.com/techguy. Learn all about it. What's nice is it's software, so it's transparent. You can see every trade made on your behalf on your computer or your phone. They will also, you can add your own non-Wealthfront bank and brokerage accounts so you can see how all your assets are doing. That's nice. If you go to wealthfront.com/techguy right now, you can get a free portfolio review. Not a human, no salesman will call. Just they'll tell you, you know, how at risk your portfolio is, how diversified it is, what you're losing to fees, that kind of thing. They'll also generate a Wealthfront portfolio for free, so you can see how they would invest your money. They've got now more than $3 billion in client assets, and they're growing so fast. I think you want to take a look at this. Read up about it. Wealthfront.com/techguy. And as I said, you can start it for $500, but they're going to do something really nice. You're going to manage your first $15,000 free of charge forever. Forever. At no cost. Nice. Wealthfront.com/techguy. Just read up about it. Find out who they are. Read the FAQ. See how things work. I think you're going to be pretty impressed, but I want you to check it out. By the way, if you decide to invest, they only ask, you know, a few questions. It's not a long questionnaire. They make it very easy. Wealthfront.com. You can read how their system works. Wealthfront.com/techguy. How they do the tax loss harvesting and all that. It's really cool. The team behind it, smart people. Wealthfront.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Love that song. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Scott, we were talking about Mr. Robot. That's why Nathan Staten, our musical director, has picked right up on that. Off the air, we're talking about, because I was talking about how you could protect yourself if you are using technology, and it's darn hard. Mr. Robot was a fun USA Network show. I guess it's coming back, about a hacker, and like Elliot, the hacker, was like supremely good at what is his job. But of course, a hacker has to use the internet, has to use computers, and a hacker knows better than anyone how vulnerable he might be. Plus, he knows other hackers who have the skills to go after him. See, those are the people who really should worry, because, you know, they might be the target of a jealous hacker. So at one point in episode 2, Elliot decides, oh my gosh, I've been compromised, and he must destroy everything. And the first thing he does, what is the first thing he does? He takes the SIM cards out of his smartphones and other devices, because, right, your tablets and your computers might have SIM cards. And he puts them in the microwave. And I'm not recommending this. Puts them in the microwave oven and fries them. Because metal, you know, in the microwave oven, metal basically is going to burst into flame. I don't know if this is a safe thing to do. It could also break your microwave. But he does that, and they pop, pop, pop. Those are no good. Then what does he do? Is he takes out he takes the memory out of his computer and slams it with a hammer. The hardest thing to deal with is a hard drive. Now, I know the British Secret Service, MI6, has a protocol for hard drives, for protecting the data on the hard drive. It involves opening up the hard drive, scrubbing it with a giant magnet, grinding it down into metal filings, putting them in a box, and putting them in the basement of MI6. You don't even throw those out. You just in case, you don't. Now, I think that's probably excessive. But on the other hand, people who, you know, do this for a living probably are pretty aware of what the capabilities are out there. Soak it in hydrochloric acid till it dissolves. Problem is, some hard drives are glass. You have to grind those up, too. R. Chandra in our chat room with the understatement of the day. Seems quite excessive. Yes. Yes, it is. That's the problem. See, we're talking, you know, law enforcement's talking about how everybody's going dark and encryption and we can't listen in on people anymore. And it really ignores the fact that we are streaming data off our persons at all times. There's all sorts of information going on all the time. You saw the Philadelphia Police Department. You see what they did? They have some fairly sophisticated technology that we're using for license plate recognition. I mean, I understand why people are afraid for their privacy. So they had a truck, and it had to have some stuff on the roof, some kind of fancy stuff on the roof, called ALPR, ALPR. ALPR, they had the LSAG MPH 900. Oh, man. That uses infrared cameras to detect license plate numbers by measuring temperature differentials between the characters in the license plate and the surrounding background, which must be fractions of a degree, and then using optical character recognition. And apparently you can capture multiple plates simultaneously, hundreds of plates an hour. And the Philadelphia police had this truck just parked, keeping track of every car that went by. Now, that seems right on the face of it to be a little intrusive. But the real problem they had, they didn't want to, you know, anybody to know what they're up to. So they put a Google Maps sign on the car. They pretended they were Google Maps. Yeah, we're just mapping the neighborhood. That's all. Don't mind us. It's like a movie where the CIA plants a van outside your house and says TV repairman. Yeah, we're just Google Maps. There's lots of issues here. Of course, the blanket collection of license plates, while probably not illegal, does seem intrusive. I'm sure is illegal to pose as Google. And Google wasn't too happy either, I might add. That's why we have a Wi-Fi access point. We've never figured out whose it is. Somewhere in the building that's called FBI surveillance van. We feel it deters everybody. Scott in Lawndale, California is next. Hi, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, if I wasn't paranoid before, I sure am now.
Yeah, well, that's the point is, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Gizmodo published an article. They had asked the FBI for Freedom of Information Act. Mr. FBI man, ever subpoena people's Amazon Echoes and have Amazon turn on the microphone so you can listen in the house, and the FBI declined to answer. Now, that could mean that they do. It could also mean they would like you to think that they do. But either way, if you've got a microphone in your presence, I guess there's, you know, a court order could probably turn it on. Let me think. Do you have any microphones around you? Oh, just your phone, your computer, your Echo, your TV set, your Xbox One, your remote control. That's a few things.
Yeah.
Anyway, what can I do for you?
Yeah, my daughter, she's a first-year college student studying fashion design and merchandising, and she's got a YouTube channel.
Wants to do some what's her channel?
Tips and reviews. I don't know.
Oh, some dad you are. Your big chance to plug your... Oh, she's going to kill you? You're going to plug your daughter's YouTube channel on national radio, and I can't remember.
I blew it.
No, that's okay. Yeah. We won't tell her.
Yes.
No, actually, it's refreshing because a lot of times people call, believe it or not, pretending to ask a question, but merely to plug their YouTube channel. It happens.
Oh, that's terrible.
Shocking.
Well, yeah. Well, it is a national show.
Yeah, so. Well, you know, why not? Whatever works.
Yeah.
So what can I do for you?
So, she wants a DSL, well, a camera that's got the flip-out screen that flips out to the side so you can see. So she's like, if she's like 5 feet from the camera, she can look at the viewfinder.
Oh, what a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, all camcorders do that. But who wants a camcorder, right? That's such a...
That's what I was telling her, right. It's kind of a dying breed.
Yeah.
And so I figured a DSLR would probably be the best.
Well, a lot of DSLRs do not. Mine has an articulating LCD. I have a Sony, but it wouldn't go all the way around to the other side. So you really do have to look. I'm pretty sure there are Nikon cameras, and they do nice video, that have articulating LCDs. But you want to, you know, the problem is a lot of these are designed for the photographer to hold the camera at waist level or over her head, mm-hmm. not turn around and give you a view of yourself while you're shooting. So let's see, the EOS Rebel, the chat room is saying, oh, and that's actually a very nice entry-level DSLR. And that has, yes, it does. I see an image on their website of the... This would be a good choice. The EOS Rebel T6i. The LCD will turn all the way around. And these are fairly affordable. The list is $700. I think you can get it for $500 if you shop around. The EOS Rebel. And there'd be some other EOS Rebels. That would give her really excellent video. The Nikon D5500. And then there's somebody's given us Scooter X, our chat mod in the chat room, has a link to Vlogger Pro, because she's a vlogger, a video blogger, right? And they've got an article there at Vlogger Pro, the 6 best vlogging cameras with flip screens. Turns out she's not the only one who wants to do this. The Canon PowerShot G7, the Lumix from Panasonic, the Canon Vixia, the Samsung NX Mini. I'll put a link to this in our show notes at TechGuyLabs.com. But they have 6 cameras here that do this. And these are all excellent. She could even shoot in 4K with some of these, which would be, you know, be nice.
So do you think, like, the as far as taking on photography down the road, because she's in fashion design.
Yeah, but she wants a good camera. The EOS would be a great choice. Yeah.
Okay.
That'd be a great choice. So would, you know what, so would the Panasonic Lumix. Those are excellent. The Sony A5100 mirrorless would be very good too. There's some good choices out there. Look, if for future, she probably wants one with interchangeable lenses. So look for what's called a DSLR or interchangeable lens camera. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. T6i would be a great choice. The Lumix is excellent. You know what? You can't go wrong. There's so many good cameras now out there. Really good cameras. The D5500 is a superb camera. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality and Ekbar Knudel. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, outside that area. You can Skype to us because of the internet. We got viewers all over, listeners all over the world, and you can Skype us as well because it's a free call on Skype Out. Back to the phones we go. Lori is in Oceanside. Hi, Lori. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
The reason that I'm calling is I'm wondering if you can help with some suggestions for technology. I want to do like a small group meeting for a church online. And so what I'd like to be able to see each person that would join, probably up to like 10 people, to be able to see their face and interact with them online. And also for me to be able to like show a video, and then there would be discussion about that video afterwards. And so I was wondering if
you want to see everybody in the meeting at once. No.
Well,
how many people?
Like maybe up to 10 people.
Okay. There are a couple ways to do this. There is, of course, Google Hangouts, but that tops out at 8 people.
Okay.
That's kind of, so it'd be like a Bible study, something like that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's kind of nice because whoever's speaking will pop up to a big screen. And it does that automatically. And it does have the screen sharing and so forth. I think this is a great idea. And I bet you there are people who are doing online Bible study in a similar fashion. There are commercial products like GoToWebinar that is from a company called Citrix. GoToWebinar is designed to do online seminars. They call them webinars. Uh-huh. And it will allow you to have hundreds of people in there. And it has a little bit more sophisticated screen sharing and you know, higher quality video and so forth, but it's not free.
Okay.
So that could be about as much as $89 a month. So you may not want to spend that kind of money. I guess if you take you could take up a collection and do it. I do think that it would be worth trying Google Hangouts. Now, another thing that's going on because of a technology Google has introduced and is widely supported by everybody in browsers is something called WebRTC. And this is a new video protocol that all modern browsers support that allow you to do exactly this. But somebody has to, and it, by the way, it's done in the browser. So you could actually give participants just a link and say, click this link, you'll be in our meeting.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, that's the easiest way. They don't have to download any software or anything like that. So there are a number of the problem with this is WebRTC is used by Hangouts, but there are more sophisticated WebRTC solutions out there designed for this kind of thing. Maybe Jitsi, J-I-T-S-I. That is a multi-party video conference. There's no technical limit to the number of people. So I would look at Jitsi and see what they're... I'm trying to see if they have a limited number. That one, I believe, has a free version.
Okay.
So people can write... And Intel does this, by the way. A lot of companies do this kind of thing. People can write their own interface to WebRTC. So there are, I'm sure, going to be some free solutions as well. That would allow, you know, you to do this. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if somebody has developed a solution for Bible study for churches and or nonprofits. That would be really cool because it might then have some features that would be specific to your needs. So I'm just looking at WebRTC conference servers. And yes, indeed, there are free versions. You could, you know, roll your own. I would look at Jitsi. Jitsi's been around a long time, J-I-T-S-I. And I just want to, you know, I think it's a free download. Yeah, it is. It's free. And it runs on Windows, OS X, and Linux. And so you don't have to run this. You could run the server, and everybody else could get in via a browser.
Okay.
How sophisticated are you?
You know, I'm a database programmer, but when it comes to, like, programming or...
There's no programming involved, but you're smart enough to install and run software and so forth.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
This works also with Facebook, by the way, which is kind of cool. So if somebody's on Facebook, they can just get in. Let me see how many... If it says how many people... I don't see a limit. I bet you you can get 10 people in there. There's no technical reason why you should be limited to that. J-I-T-S-I. High def audio. You don't need to have an account. That's nice, right? Because you just want people to give them a link and let them sign in. A lot of 12-step programs use conference bridges for stuff like this, but it'd be nice to see video, wouldn't it? So this would be a great solution. I would look at JITSI and play with it a little bit and see how it works for you.
All right.
It's also secure, which is nice. I mean, I don't think you're probably worried about security, but it's still nice for other people. JITSI. It's open source. It's free, and it looks to be the kind of powerful solution that you're looking for. Well, I'll tell you what, though. I'm sure there are other solutions, and if anybody's listening and has some suggestions, let's put this on the website. We do it anyway. TechGuyLabs.com. We break it up by show, by hour, by call. So you can go right to this call, first call in the second hour, and add your comments and your thoughts, and we'll put as many links from the chat room and so forth. And you can call too, 8888-ASK-LEO, and we'll find a solution. This is a very exciting area right now, this free video calling, video conferencing. Everybody's doing it. You know, you download a messaging app, WhatsApp or Facebook or Telegram or almost anything, and they've got video as well. For free calling over data. And increasingly, we're seeing conferencing as well. It's a really good idea, I think. JITSI.org. My phone number is 8888-ASK-LEO. When we get back, we're going to have to take a break. Doug in Salt Lake City says, my Verizon Wi-Fi is tapping out. Data caps are killing me, but I don't know what's eating my data. How to figure out where your data's going. We live in an age of data caps. And it's easy to hit them. And it's very expensive to go beyond them. So let's figure out where is your data going. We'll talk about that when we come back. My phone number, 888-827-5536. And again, website, techguylabs.com. Leo Laporte with the dumpling song. I love you, dumpling. You heard the story about the dumpling emoji, right? This is a whole thing. You know, the emojis originally came from Japan. And so they're kind of Japan-centric. You know, there's like many different sushi and mochi emojis, but not so many. You know, there's no hot dog, no hamburger. I think they just add a couple to kind of represent other food groups. But there is a campaign to get a dumpling emoji. Turns out, dumplings are universal. Every culture has a dumpling. And we got started because Suzanne's visiting us from Austria, where she's famous. She's the world's most foremost creator of strawberry dumplings, strawberry knödel. She's world famous for her. And she's a dentist. So she's I think, drumming up business is what she's doing. Anyway, so we started talking about these, and in China, you've got your want. China's. I remember I took a dumpling class when I was in Xi'an. They have the wontons, the guozi, that's Japanese, but the pot stickers, many kinds of dumplings. Of course, ravioli in Italy, the pierogi in Poland, the knödel in Austria. Oh, that's my favorites. So there's actually a Kickstarter. There was a Kickstarter to raise money because it turns out you can't just say, I want an emoji. You got to get on the emoji consortium. There's a committee to determine what's in the specification for emojis. See, emojis are part of a larger specification called Unicode. You know, remember ASCII? Old timers might remember ASCII. That was the original way to represent characters. You know, space was hex 20, and each character had a number assigned to it. It was the character set, and every computer had to represent the. Otherwise, if you don't agree what the A looks like, you know, here's an A, and that's the number. Then you type, and different things happen on different computers. So everybody agreed. The first one was ASCII, the American Standard for Computer Interchange something. But, of course, ASCII was very limited. It only had 128 characters, and that wasn't enough to represent all the various character sets all over the world. Not just Roman characters, but Cyrillic and Japanese and Chinese. So Unicode was created. It has a much larger set of potential characters. And once Unicode was created, we had room for a few extra things, like emoji. And so the emoji has become an emerging standard that is the Unicode consortium says, oh, yes, that emoji. And each of them, by the way, has a number assigned to it and a name, although the design might vary. There's actually a number of sites. My favorite is Emojipedia that document all the different emojis and will even show you what, you know, Google, Apple, Twitter, and others represent their emojis as. So you can see, you know, the smiling face with the heart-shaped eyes looks different depending on who you're using. Samsung looks one way, Microsoft another, Google a third. Google's emojis always remind me like of the tip of a thumb for some reason. They're flat on the bottom, around on the top. Apple's is a circle like a happy face. Twitter and everybody, Facebook, they all have their own version, but it all has to be a smiling face with heart-shaped eyes, which, by the way, was approved as part of Unicode 6.0 in 2010. Oh, yeah, this is serious stuff. You can't just, you know, put an emoji in there. You got to get the committee to agree. So a young woman who believes that the dumpling emoji should be better represented since they're in every culture has raised $12,000 on Kickstarter, has bought a seat because it costs $18,000 to join the Unicode Consortium, has bought a seat and is now lobbying on behalf of all of us to bring the dumpling to a phone near you. Ah, yes, iPad 41856 in our chat room has posted two of the new emojis, hamburger and pizza. That's fine. That's all well and good, having hamburger and pizza. That's excellent. But we need dumplings. I'm all for it. And by the way, you have to lobby seriously for this. There's some wrangling. There's some buttonholing. There's some peer pressure going on at these meetings, these committee meetings. But you know what, Suzanne? If you sent them just a plate of strawberry canoodle, I think they might say, you know, I think we can agree there should be an emoji for this. Yes, indeed. Doug in Salt Lake City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. You're my only hope, Obi-Wan.
Yes.
My problem is the only internet I get is through Verizon, MiFi.
So you're using Verizon's LTE as your home internet?
Yes.
Yeah.
And I have 15 gigs, and I usually use between 8 and 10 gigs each month. And it rolled over on Wednesday.
Mm.
And I went on Wednesday for 2 hours to check my email and search the web.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know why, but later in the day, I happened to go on the app and check to see how much I had used. And then it's from midnight Wednesday to about 9 o'clock Wednesday morning, I'd used 3.5 gig. And I went,
wow.
I don't know how I could use that much.
Now, tell me about, do you have one computer using this? Is it how many devices are using this?
Well, there's several devices, but there was only one device turned on at the time.
And that was?
Windows 10 machine.
Perfect.
Dell Windows 10.
Good news. So this was added in Windows 10. It's a really great feature. If you go to your control panel and you look at the network and internet, there is a data usage tab on the left, you'll see, that will actually show you not only how much data was used on that machine, but which apps used it.
I was trying to figure out which apps he used. It showed the data was used by Firefox.
Okay, so it was in the browser. That's good. You know, by the way, that's important to narrow that down, because if it said your email client or, you know, something else, there might be things running in the background. Email's a common culprit that, you know, download every 5 minutes or whatever. But it's in your browser, so that means it was something you actively did. Whether it was Netflix, watching Netflix in Firefox, or YouTube videos, listening to music, it was something you did in the browser.
Yeah, the thing is that I didn't do anything that I'm aware of. Anyway, I called.
Well, wait a minute. Windows 10 said you did, right? You saw much of that data in your browser?
Yes.
Yeah, so you can call Verizon all you want. They're just going to say, well, no, you used it, because you did.
They did. They said that I used it.
Well, you did. Your Windows even said you did. Your browser did.
was between 0200 and 0400 when I was in bed asleep.
Well, we got to investigate your browser. It's obviously got a secret life of its own. So there's... Okay, we'll talk when we get back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. How could a browser... It's getting up in the middle of the night. Do you sleepwalk, sir?
No, not that I'm aware of.
And there's no one else in the house?
No, it's just my wife and I, and we were both in bed asleep. And
how could a browser in the middle of the night use all that data?
It gets even worse. That's why I called you, because I'm at an end. I can't figure it out. Last night, I went on for an hour trying to troubleshoot it, trying to figure out where the data usage, and I ended up using another 2.5 gigs. I am 4 days into my cycle.
That's terrible. Yeah, that's terrible. So the thing is, there's no point in calling Verizon, because you have evidence of your own that it was done on that computer, that Windows 10 computer, weirdly between 2 and 4 a.m.
Yes.
But that was, and Firefox used the bulk of that data?
Yes.
That's so
sad. All it'll tell me is it was in the apps.
It was Firefox. It is. So you can look in your browser history, and it has timestamps on it. You can see where your browser was. Do you leave your browser open when you go to bed?
Well, I did that first night.
Yeah. Yeah, from now on, close it. So it could be you should look and see what extensions you have running. One thing you can do on Windows 10, and I would do this, there is a setting to turn on to tell it that your connection is metered. This is another thing Microsoft added for precisely this reason.
Can you point out where that is?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So you're going to go to your settings.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is in the network and internet. And select Wi-Fi. You're on Wi-Fi, I presume, yeah? Yeah, of course you are. Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi. It's an advanced...
computer connected by cable.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I've got a cable plugged into the back of the...
To the Verizon box. Okay. I know it'll do it for Wi-Fi. Check and see. It's in the network and internet control panel. In the advanced options, you can say set as metered connection. So I know you can do it for Wi-Fi. If you're using Ethernet, then it should say that as well. And set it as a metered connection. And then the reason you would do that is because you can then tell it a limit. You can control it a little bit better. It disables automatic downloading of Windows updates, which you probably want to do. It disables automatic downloading of app updates, which you probably want to do. And what it might help a lot is there may be something that's running, some extension that's running in Firefox that's doing something in the background. Sounds like there is. When you turned off Firefox, did it get better?
Yes.
But now you said you were checking the... What were you using to check it that you used up another 2.5 gigs?
I was just going through, trying to figure out what was turned on and what wasn't.
Do you use OneDrive? Do you use...
All of the other devices in my house were turned off. So I just had...
No, because Windows told you it's using it. That's not...
Yeah.
That amount is being used by Firefox on that machine between 2 and 4 a.m. That's what Windows told you. So it's not anything else in your house. It's that machine in Firefox. So you want to make sure... Do you use... I'm trying to think what kind of extension it could be. Do you use any cloud storage services?
Oh, I do have iCloud. iCloud.
Oh, it's a Mac? No, iCloud.
No.
It's OneDrive.
It's a Dell Windows machine.
Yeah, so it's OneDrive or something. Those could be it as well. What you don't want to do is be on a web page that is automatically loading advertising. Because which is probably what was happening. I talked a little more off the air with Doug in Salt Lake City, who had the mysterious downloading in the middle of the night. I think the chat room actually came up with a good solution. They said, if you left Firefox on a page, and there are many in the internet, that automatically downloaded advertisements and rotated them and downloaded more, you could easily use up a lot of data. That's a lot to use in 2 hours, but that's certainly a good idea. Make sure you close your browser and shut down or go or sleep your computer. Shutting down would guarantee no bandwidth leak. And I told him a few other things you could do with Windows 10, including turning on that metered connection. But I see somebody looking over my shoulder here. A familiar face. He's back from the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, sorry about that. Connection wasn't too strong.
Oh, it was fun, though, listening to the horses and the race in the background. That was really fun. You know, Nathan Staten, our musical director, was there, too. I guess he's got family in Louisville, grew up there, around the corner from the Derby. His whole family's at Derby, and he won the trifecta.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, he got a box.
A trifecta? Yeah.
Did you get a trifecta? Yes, he says he did.
How much was that?
How much, Nathan? $90.
That's it. Usually the trifecta pays a lot more than that.
Well, two of them were favorites, right? So, he said it was. He said it started raining right before the race.
Oh my God! It was like a downpour. Like you wouldn't believe. I thought it was a tornado. I rushed my dad inside.
So dad must have, this is the dad's trip of a lifetime, right?
That's right. And then I escorted him back to Connecticut. And now I'm back home in L.A. A day.
And then you're going off again because he's a traveling fool, Johnny Jett is. Johnny Jett's our travel guru. He joins us every week to talk about using the internet and apps to make your travel better. You can find his website. It's first place I'd go, johnnyjett.com. There's a free travel, number of free travel newsletters there. You can get travel deals and so forth. He's also on Instagram and Twitter, Johnny Jett. So anyway, welcome home. And do you want to tell us where you're going? You like to surprise us, don't you?
Actually, this time I'm going to be a plus one. Usually Natalie's my plus one, but
your
this time
wife's
I'm
taking
plus
you.
One. She got hired by to do Pinterest.
She's a famous Pinterester.
So she's going to go do some Pinterest. So we got to get better.
Can I recommend? You'd go search the world for the best strawberry canoodle?
Yes, actually, I just saw that before I went on, so I'm going to have to tell her to.
I know where to get it in Vienna.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. That would be a good one. Ooh, I have Pinterest actually is useful for cooking. I got recipes for my mason jar salads on Pinterest. There's some good stuff on Pinterest.
It's huge on. I mean,
and she's
cooking
like a big
and travel.
She's like a famous Pinterester.
Big time. Her handle's Natalie Discala, DISCALA.
Must follow. She
did, I got to give her a big plug.
And she takes
plug.
Beautiful pictures. So she's going to a conference or?
No, she's actually going to a destination. We're going to Palm Beach, Florida.
So the deal is, let me get this straight. So if you're a travel blogger or, you know, nowadays with social media, every travel company is desperate. I know I follow a lot of travel Instagrammers.
Right.
And they are always staying at these beautiful hotels. That's the deal. You go to the hotel, post pictures, you pin it, whatever.
Some of them.
And they'll put you
up. Hers is totally different. Hers is actually a paid gig where she will be traveling around the whole county, highlighting their best, taking pictures of all their attractions and then creating boards around it on their Pinterest board.
She's basically she's going to be doing social media consulting for Palm Beach.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, she has beautiful boards, and she's blowing up. This week she did a commercial in Canada for American Express Starwood, and then she did a big radio interview the other day. Now I'm like, oh my God, I'm her plus one from now on.
Johnny, we're old timers, you know, websites, podcasting—that's the old hat. You got to do the social media thing, man. That's
well,
where it's
I'm
all
in there.
At.
And speaking of social media, one of my websites is about social media. It's called I Hate the Wait.
I Hate the Wait.
So this was created. I just tweeted it, by the way, so you don't have to go. And I tagged you in it.
Thank you.
But this was created by Airlines for America, the industry's trade group. And everyone's sick and tired of all these long TSA lines, including me. We landed last week from Paris in Chicago. We had to, once we went through customs, we had to go through TSA. And for the TSA pre-check, it took 30 minutes, 31 minutes. I timed it.
Because, you bought that global traveler program thing.
Well, global entry, that includes TSA pre-check, but you can get that separately. It's a whole other conversation. But anyway,
but
these lines
that, it was half an
are
hour.
Ridiculous. And actually, I just put a video on my website. If you go to my website, you can click this video of someone took in Midway in Chicago. Literally, it was over a mile long, the wait.
I've heard of airlines complaining that people are missing flights. Hundreds of people are missing flights.
You got to get to the airport early, especially in these big airports. It's ridiculous. It really is ridiculous. So, you know, this group is encouraging people to take a photo of the long lines and then hit I hate the wait. By the way, that video right there, that is just the beginning of the line. It goes around and around.
This is worse than Disneyland on July 4th. It's crazy. So how much now should people allow?
I mean, it all depends on the time of day and which airport you're going out to. Going out of the big ones like Chicago, Minneapolis, Atlanta, L.A., New York, they all have some really long lines. Although
if you're going to miss your flight, is there anything you can do? I mean,
there's not a lot you can do because everyone's in the same boat and the airline is not going to wait for you. So get to the airport early. And if you miss your flight, it's going to be difficult to get on another flight because all the airlines are running at capacity. So play it safe, get to the airport, and just bring a good book or do some people watching or whatever.
Yeah, I don't mind waiting. I don't want to miss you – know, well, I do mind waiting, but that's preferable to missing your flight.
Are you looking at that line? Is that insane?
It's still going. It's still, but we started playing this video when you started talking, and it's still going. I mean, the guy – when you said a mile, I think that's a mile.
Exactly.
It's like the line for iPhone 6. It's crazy.
So
only you don't get an iPhone at the end of it. You just get to get on your airplane.
So you can try and get on TSA PreCheck if you already have it. Some people, older people, usually get it on theirs. Also, you know, after I waited 20 something minutes in this TSA PreCheck line, I noticed that the priority line for American Airlines was actually shorter than the PreCheck. But no one told you, and it was hard to see. So look for it. Ask the agents which line is the shortest, because they usually know. And, you know, that's your best bet. Or, you know, if you're really running late for a flight, you can, you know, just beg someone to bring you up to the front or ask someone to cut.
We're still going down the line, by the way. This whole time I've been watching this video and it's still going. I think we finally got to the end. Oh, my goodness. That was ridiculous.
So keep that in mind when you're traveling, especially out of the big airports. Although, you know, I flew out of Lexington this week and there was no line on a Monday morning.
That's the problem. You get to the airport 4 hours early and then there's no line. It's like you can't. So there's no way to predict this.
Well, actually, there are some ways. The TSA does have a website where it will tell you the suggested wait times, although you can't really
trust that. What's going on? Have they reduced the staff?
They reduced the staff. They're having problems.
More people are traveling than ever before, too, right?
Travel's up 7%, so these guys are just getting slammed, and they cut staff. So they're trying to find a fix right now. We'll see what happens this week.
I see this all the time, though. When we travel, you'll get there, and there's one TSA agent. There are four, five lanes, but only one is open. It's not at all unusual.
But look at different terminals too. So if you're flying out of a big airport like LA, you know, I'll be flying American tomorrow, and if that line is really long, I'll go to the terminal next door, see how that is, because a lot of these you can connect behind security.
IHateTheWait.com. You can tweet it. You can Instagram it. And at least, I mean, it doesn't help, but maybe people will know, and maybe the TSA will sit up and take notice, although it sounds like they probably won't. Hey, Johnny, we're out of time. Save your app. That's all right.
I'll see.
And have fun in Palm Beach, Mr. Plus One. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So now I'm scared about flying, you know, the next time I fly.
It's hit and miss. Sometimes it's ridiculously long and sometimes it's you know, not bad at all. But, you know, they're all thinking that it's going to get worse when the summer crunch comes. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go in June when Michael gets out of school. So that means everybody else will be going too. We want to go.
Where are you going again?
We're thinking of going to Newport Beach.
Rhode Island?
No. Newport Beach, down the road from you, in Orange County. So my hairdresser said it's really fun. You stay at the Marriott there. You get the Duffy boats, and you can sail around the canals and go to restaurants and stuff. Apparently they've got a boardwalk, kind of like, you know, with rides and stuff. Yeah. What do you think?
I haven't been in a while, but of course. Then you should come up to Manhattan Beach.
I know somebody up the road a piece. I could play volleyball with them. You won't be there, of course, but
I hope to be
here. We were thinking of that. I don't know.
Okay.
We need something, like we used to go to San Diego. We need something quick, like we could do a 5-day trip or 4-day trip or something like that.
I would drive. Forget about
that. We're thinking of driving because with
forget about flying.
Yeah. We're thinking if we can't get out of, sometimes you can fly out of Santa Rosa to John Wayne.
Or take the train.
Train.
Yes, the Amtrak.
That'll only take 15 days.
No, it won't. It
The track is out. We're going to put you on a bus through Portland.
Santa Barbara and stuff.
Okay. That would be fun. Train, baby. We're going to take the train. Michael enjoyed that.
Take that bus I mentioned a few weeks ago.
Oh, the truck that's a bus that you sleep on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that.
One quick thing that I wanted to tell these guys as one of my tips is that if you're going to France and you're booking train travel, I would stay away from Wednesdays and Thursdays because the unions just said they're going to start. They're starting to strike every Wednesday and Thursday until it gets breached. And of course, this is France. And every time I go to France or even nearby France,
somebody's always on strike in France.
It's my hysterical. Flights are delayed all the time. Even flying from London to Portugal last week.
I'm sorry, the gentleman who measures the oil in the airplane is on strike.
It's true. The air traffic controllers are always striking. Yeah, but anyway,
somebody always on strike.
The French Rail are saying they're going to strike every Wednesday and Thursday until this is reached.
Oh my
so
God.
So stay away from those 2 days.
We're going to France in September. I hope it'll be all right by then.
It's got to be booked by then. I mean,
but by then, the TSA wait will be 4 days, and I'll have to leave a week early.
Hey, I followed Johnny on Instagram and everything, but you said Portugal? I missed that.
Yeah, he was in Portugal.
What part?
I was in Portugal just for a night. Actually, no, I was there for a few nights. I was in Lisbon for a night. Then we took a Viking ocean cruise to Porto, which is one of the most underrated cities in Europe.
Watch your life,
Killing
Johnny J.
Killing me. But I'm going to Portugal in June, so.
I'm going to Vienna
for
the strawberry canoodle.
Okay, good. Portugal is one of the great destinations in Europe, and it's
cheap.
Pretty much half the price.
Yeah, it's cheap.
Okay, good to know.
I've heard very good things about Portugal, yeah.
Well, the flights right now are a little crazy, and I've been waiting,
They should not be. Look at, you can fly from Oakland to London on Norwegian, as long as you don't pack a big bag, and you can just get to Europe for $300 each way.
What?
So go through London.
Oakland to London, and then it's really cheap to fly around Europe. You just take Ryanair.
Oakland to Scandinavia. You have to check, but they just started flying. I know Norwegian just started flying out of Oakland, and they're offering, I think it was like $179 fare without tax.
Wow.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad we talked, because I've been checking in every other day, and it's just horrible. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
And look at my website, the toolbar on there, and also go to Google Flights and then search alternate airports. Don't just look at Lisbon or wherever you're flying into. Look at just trying to get to London or Ireland or Scandinavia, Stockholm, Copenhagen.
Okay, because I did a flight alert with Kayak, and what's the other one? And then I have used Google, but this is great.
Oh, use JohnnyJet.com.
Yeah.
Pack light.
Pack light.
I can't. Come on now.
She's a beautiful.
If my wife can do it. You can do it.
Clothes
believe me.
Horse.
Our first
well, can
date,
I buy
she
a lot of stuff when I get there?
Trunk.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're in Europe. Bring a bag back.
Yeah. Okay. All
pack
I need
little,
is a bikini where I'm going.
Ooh, Ibiza. See you, Johnny. Our show today brought to you by Epson. Oh, I love these eco tanks. We just got the 4550 at home. Nice printer. So. This is something I got to really pat Epson on the back for, because I think a lot of companies, it's hard when you have a business and your business is doing well and you decide, you know what, we want to make our customers happy. And they came up with the EcoTank printers. The new EcoTank ET4550, for instance, is a wireless all-in-one printer. This is one we bought. It doesn't use ink cartridges. It features these refillable ink tanks. This is an incredible improvement. I love it. And so does CES. They gave it the 2016 Innovation Award. The EcoTank ET4550 comes with enough ink to print 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. That's the equivalent to about 50 ink cartridge sets. And then, in a couple of years, when it's time to get new ink, you'll save up to 80% with low-cost replacement bottles. So Epson's really listened. And I want to just, you know, they deserve praise. And you deserve an EcoTank printer the next time you're in the market for an inkjet. Take a look at the Epsons. They have a huge range. Even this big boy. I love this big boy. The WFR4640. 20,000 pages of ink in the tank. I set up the 4550. Lisa got it. I set it up for her. It was easy. Took no time. Comes with the little bottles. You just put it in the tank. Couldn't be easier. They just recently released their Creative Print app. Makes it easy to preserve your Instagram and Facebook photos, too. And, you know, the ink, these are beautiful, colorful, vivid colors. You can actually use the app to create personalized photo collages, custom greeting cards, stationery, coloring book templates. You love, everybody loves to color now. That's the new thing. Adult coloring books. Make your own from your Instagram photos. You can also print photos directly onto CDs and DVDs. Print from your mobile device to a variety of compatible Epson all-in-one printers over the wireless network. I didn't even talk about the precision core technology in these. It's amazing. Go to Epson.com/EcoTank and transform the way your home, your office, your work group prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers, EPSON.com/EcoTank. We thank Epson so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Cricket. Cricket. Hello, Cricket in Santa Barbara. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well.
I enjoy your show, even though I'm not techie, but I like listening to all the different things that you feature on your show.
Makes you glad not to be a techie, probably.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm glad I don't use that stuff. Man, these people are suffering.
Just a quick note, too, about Newport Beach. Be sure you go to Balboa Island. Take the ferry from Newport Beach over to Balboa Island.
That's what
Island,
we want to do, yeah.
Yeah, if you have little ones, it's great.
Yeah, well, he's 13. He's kind of taller than me, but he will like the boat. And we're going to, and I think Johnny said, don't go on a plane, take a train. Maybe we'll just take the train down, take Amtrak.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Idea. Yeah. Well, thank you for the tip. I appreciate that. And Santa Barbara's gorgeous, too. We were thinking of driving so we could stop in Santa Barbara on the way and maybe go to Hearst Castle and San Simeon and do a little of
we
that.
We try not to tell too many people about Santa Barbara.
Oh, so beautiful. So beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what can I do for you?
Well, I have a prehistoric question. I have an iPad 4. And I'm thinking about buying a newer version, but I don't really use it a lot. I'm kind of wondering if I'm able to update it past iOS 5.
Oh, yeah. Oh, please, okay. Please do. It's an iPad 4. That's what you're calling it, the fourth generation. Yeah. Is it a mini?
No, it's not a mini. It's probably like one of the first or second versions. Okay. It's probably about 10 years old.
Oh, no. First of all, the iPad didn't come out till 2010. So it would be very strange. The fourth generation came out 2 years later, so it's only 4 years old. You should, I think, be able to put iOS 8 on it, the latest version. It came with iOS 6, but I'm pretty sure it's compatible. Everything from the iPad 2 up are compatible with iOS 8 and should run fine. And you do, by the way, want to install iOS 8. Now, the more important question is, should you upgrade? And this is one of the problems people are having. I'm sorry, iOS 9. Did I say 8? 9. One of the problems people are having Apple's having is that people don't feel the need to upgrade. You use it once in a while. It's fine, right? You don't feel like it's slow, do you?
No, not slow.
It will run iOS 9 just fine. And all the software will be the same. You won't notice any difference. The big difference in the newest iPad is it's faster, and you can use that pencil. If you don't have a hankering to draw with a pencil on your iPad, then I would just say you're good.
Okay. Is it something I can do at home, or do I need to bring it in?
No, you just do it. In fact, I bet you it's been suggesting it. Go into your settings and go in the general settings, look at update, and you probably have a suggested update or two. You always want to do those because you want to get it up to date.
Okay, well, just in general, it's telling me that it is up to date with iOS 5. So,
why do you call it? Now, there is it? See, I'm thinking maybe it's an older iPad than you think it is.
Yeah, I think it is.
It's probably an iPad 1. They didn't give them names, makes it very confusing. You know, there was the iPad Air, the iPad Mini, but. So I was assuming you were talking the fourth generation iPad, which came out in 2012.
Okay.
But I think it's older if you're still running an old version of iOS and there's no update. In
That's
that
correct.
Case, you would benefit greatly, I think, from an update.
Okay. And again, I could just do it on my computer?
No, a new one.
If it's, oh, a new one.
Yeah.
Okay.
If it says you can't update it, you have an iPad 1. You have the old original iPad.
Yeah, I think that's what I have because I remember it being pretty, you know.
Yeah.
Shiny
and new. Yeah, you got it in 2010. Yeah. So there, yes. Unfortunately, Apple stopped updating those. I think you would like the, you don't use it a lot, do you?
No. But all my pictures and stuff are on here. And I know they'll be held in the cloud, right? Regardless.
Well, the first thing you should do is connect it to a computer and run iTunes and say back it up. And then it will be backed up fully to your computer. You should do that regularly. iCloud backup, you'll have to turn on. I don't even remember if they had iCloud backup in that day. In those days, I think they did. You have to turn that on, and you only get 5 gigabytes for free. So now some people are saying you can't update it, but Apple itself says that you have all the updates.
Yeah, it says your software is up to date, and that's with iOS 5.1.1. Yeah.
I would listen to Apple because people have reported some real sluggishness with older iPads and the newer operating systems. This is a tough one because you don't use it that much. And I'll give you a couple of the selling points. The new iPad, I already mentioned, is faster. Compared to yours, it's lots faster. It supports the latest version of the operating system, which is good for security reasons, but also there's a lot of new features that you might benefit from. It also supports the Pencil. But here's something. You said you have your pictures on it. The new iPad has a good camera, the same camera as in the iPhone, the current iPhone. So you can actually use it to take pictures. Did you use your iPad to take pictures, or you took them somewhere else?
My iPad does not have a camera on it.
Oh, it's that. It is the iPad 1. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the old one. All right.
Yeah.
Well, there's another reason you'd have a good camera on it.
Yeah. Can I ask you a quick question, too? Because I am going to be purchasing an iPhone. Could you tell me the difference between reconditioned and refurbished and if that's a good way to go?
I don't think there's a technical difference. Refurbished, in my mind, only makes sense if you're getting it from the original manufacturer. And I if you're getting a used device of any kind, laptop, tablet, or phone, buying it from the original manufacturer is always a good idea. Now, reconditioned or refurbished from a third party, that's the same thing. And it just means that they've gone through it, they've checked it, they've made sure it still runs. It should be a good deal. It should be a very good deal. But understand that you're inheriting, if there are problems with it, you're inheriting those problems. So make sure that the company that you're buying from gives you a warranty of some kind. You know, at least a 30-day, but it'd be nicer to have longer. But if it does only give you 30 days, use that thing like the Dickens in the first 30 days to try to find any problems. Who are you going to buy it from?
Well, I don't know if I can say it on the air, but the Big W, has a pretty good deal. Yeah.
Walmart?
Yes.
Yeah, you can say it on the air. I don't care. if Walmart's selling it, they're going to stand behind it. I think that's probably a good idea. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, you may find that if you get an iPhone with a bigger screen, you don't even need the iPad at all.
Yeah. See, I'm wondering about that as well.
I rarely use my iPad because my iPhone 6S Plus is huge. It's like a little iPad.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not a bad idea. The other thing, though, by the way, I should mention with the new iPad Pro, it has a keyboard. And you can use it kind of almost as a little bit of a laptop. So, but I'm liking the fact that you're not using a computer; you're using the iPad as your computer and the phone.
I have a home PC.
Oh, okay.
And most of my business is exclusive to that. But okay. You know, since the iPad, I've purchased the home PC, and it's just running Windows, so it's not compatible, obviously, with the iPad. But the iPad has sentimental value.
Yeah. Well, and there's no reason to trash it. Keep it. It's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And, maybe spend that money that you would spend on a new iPad on an even better iPhone. The bigger the screen, the more likely you'll use that instead of the iPad. It does all the same things.
Okay. How long do you think the iPad would last, the one that I have?
It's never going to wear out. That's the shameful thing about this stuff. It doesn't wear out. But the company stops supporting it. They don't update the software. newer apps require newer capabilities, so it ages itself out, just gets obsolete. But that thing will work just as well 100 years from now.
Okay, good.
Well, yeah. Sad, though. I feel like we're filling up the landfill with stuff that works perfectly well, but it's just a little slower, or the company decided they wanted to sell you a newer one. And that's, I think, a shame. So, that iPad 1 will go forever.
Okay. Well, I know I sound a little outdated.
No! Heck no.
I'm very techy, but this
no,
is perfect for
that's
me.
Fine. It's all you need.
Yeah.
Great to talk to you.
Okay. Thank you very much, right. Leo. You've been very helpful.
My pleasure, Cricket. I hear the crickets in the background, by the way. Or, no, those are birds. Okay. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. Now, I don't, people I think that I'm one of these, oh, you must have the shiny new thing. I always do, but that's my job, so I can review them. This stuff doesn't wear out. I don't see any reason. If it works for you, stick with it. Don't buy stuff just for the sake of buying stuff. Oh, Apple's going to hate me now. Leo, we'd like to talk to you about your attitude. You really do need to promote this new stuff more. Thank you, Apple. I am the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, website techguylabs.com. More calls to come. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality. I've been playing with that Vive, the HTC Vive. It's really too expensive for anybody to buy. I'm not recommending it. Because it's $800. You get the virtual reality visor, but you also get two hand devices, paddles. And it also comes with two kind of cameras that you set up. Because the Vive, which is one of these virtual reality things, it's probably the best of the bunch so far, lets you move around in a space. So you would want to have a fairly, maybe 10 feet by 10 feet space with nothing in it. So that you can set up these cameras in the corners, and then you can move around inside your virtual worlds, and it's very, very vivid. My 13-year-old was playing with it. He really liked there's one of the games is called Office Worker, and you you can choose between short order cook, mechanic, just a like plain old cubicle jockey. And there's one other, I can't remember what it is. So you have a job. It's called Job Simulator. I think that's what it's called. And you have a job. But your job, you don't care because you're throwing things, you're Xeroxing your butt, you're putting potato batteries in the car. It's so much fun. And you can do all this stuff. And it's cartoony, but it's pretty vivid. But it's expensive because you have to buy the $800 gear. And then you can't just put it on any old Windows PC. You have to have a very hefty Windows gaming PC, $1,000 or more gaming PC. Turns out 90% of the computers, the Windows computers in the world, are not powerful enough to run this. It's a very high-end product. So I'm not recommending it. But if you get talk your friend into buying it so you can try it because it's kind of cool. It's kind of interesting. This week, we're going to hear from Google. Their Google Developer Conference kicks off Wednesday. And I'm expecting to hear Google to announce probably a less expensive virtual reality device based on its Android platform. So it's standalone. You don't have to hook up to a big fancy computer. That means it's more limited. You can already go out and buy what they call Google Cardboard for a couple of bucks. It's literally cardboard, although there are companies making it out of higher quality material. Mattel makes one. It's ViewMaster product. It's about $30. And it kind of looks like a ViewMaster, but you could put your phone in it. It's got some Velcro. You take it out, you put your phone in it, and then you close it up. And then your phone is a powerful enough computer to display, 360-degree movies, or you could play Minecraft in it, which is kind of cool. You have to get a controller. 3D Minecraft, so you can look up, look down, look left, look behind you. Pretty interesting stuff. We'll see what Google announces on Wednesday. I have a feeling there's going to be some big announcements around the Chromebook. I'm a big fan of Chromebooks. And there's some very good ones now out from Dell and HP and Acer, just really high-quality ones. Of course, Google makes one as well, the little overpriced Chromebook Pixel. They stopped selling that a couple of weeks ago, which makes me think Google's going to announce a new one on Wednesday. These are really good computers for the majority of things people do. If mostly what you do is can be done in a web browser, surfing the net, getting your email, getting directions, recipes, watching video, that kind of thing. If it can be done in a browser, a Chromebook is a good choice for you. Super secure. I mean, really, seriously, super secure. You can't, bad guy can't get anything on it. You completely control it. And easy to use, not prone to any of the problems that we hear about with people with Windows PCs calling in all the time. And Macs, too, for that matter. Oh, my hard drive. No, these things are great. And they're cheap. Even the fancy ones from Acer and HP and Dell are well under $500. And you can get them for $200. Acer makes its 14-inch aluminum Chromebook. It's $250. And it's not a netbook. I mean, this is a very nice, solid PC. So we'll hear more about that. One of the things I think Google might announce on Wednesday is an addition of the Android Store to the Chrome OS that runs on these Chromebooks. That would be very interesting. If you could get all the apps and games and things you do on an Android phone, if you could get that on your Chromebook, that would be that'd be a million new applications they'd be adding. That would be very interesting. We'll talk next week, whatever it is they announce. Let's get back to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo. Mike on the line from Denver, Colorado. Hello, Mike.
How you doing there, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Love the show.
Thank you.
I have a LG V10 phone. And it didn't push the update to Marshmallow, but it did, you know, every time I look at it, it's reminding me, update. So I went online and I wanted to check before I updated to see if there's any problems. And
wait, it's telling you to update, but it did, but you can't actually do it?
Oh, no. I haven't done it yet.
You've been waiting to see. Oh, yeah, update.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, update. So Marshmallow, right? Android 6?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
oh, okay, because I was looking at some forums and stuff, and they were saying there was some problems with, I guess it's exclusive to LG devices that, like one of them is that you can't read, it doesn't read the SD card. And
that would be bad.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I use this phone constantly, videos.
Yeah, that's a nice phone. They came out last summer. LG, where are you seeing these? I haven't heard a lot about problems with this. Maybe some people, anytime you change an operating system, and this is a fairly big change, people might have individual problems.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to look for problems that everybody has, not a few people are having.
Okay.
Because if they're having problems, and then they just reboot and, you know, reset the phone, it'll work fine. I don't think that your carrier or LG would push this out if it were that problematic. And it does improve battery life significantly. It adds some new features like Google Now on Tap, which lets you search a web page and come up with Google Now cards for that page. I think Marshmallow is fabulous. And by the way, Android N is going to be announced on Wednesday. So, we're getting close to the next version. So yeah, I would say go for it. You'll see improved battery life at the very least.
Okay, because I mean, you know, when you can get lost on the web, obviously just chasing.
Well, that's the problem. You know, if there's a million users, and only 1/100 of 1% of them have problems, that's still thousands of people with problems.
True,
but it means you're not like. I mean, you know. It's like when you're watching the drug commercials and they say warning could cause sausage fingers. That's a small number of people are going to actually have sausage fingers from taking that pill. Most people will be fine.
Okay. And one, if I could, one really quick question.
Yes.
I have Windows 7 and I know I haven't updated it to 10 yet.
Time
I know it's free.
Time keeps on slipping. You have till July 29th for that free upgrade.
Should I take the dive?
It's a tougher question if you're on Windows 7. If you're on Windows 8, because 8's horrible. Windows 7 was pretty darn good.
I love it.
Yeah. I think you should. You can delay it to July 28th if you want. One thing you could do is do the update, because that will then qualify you to get it for free forever. You can still roll back to 7. You have 30 days to go back to 7. I'd back up before you do this in case something goes wrong because, again, a few people are going to have sausage fingers. But most of the time, this is fine. You roll back to 7, but now you've qualified for 10. You've qualified that machine. At any point forever, you can go to 10 on that machine.
Perfect. terrific. I didn't know that.
Yes, it's a nice feature. They call it entitlement. They've replaced now the idea that you own Windows 10 with the idea the machine owns it. So once that machine is entitled to 10, has established its ownership of 10, they can't take that away from you. It's yours forever.
Perfect. Well, it sounds like I got a lot of updating to do.
Yeah, you're going to be busy tonight.
Leo, thank you.
My pleasure. Yeah, I think it's worth upgrading. There's also, let's face it, security issues that are going to get fixed in Android 6 that you want to get fixed. There's another problem with their media player, Stage Fright. Google's fixing these, and these updates are very important. If the real problem is phones that can't be updated. But if yours can, I would take it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536, toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside, I'm sorry, I almost fell over. I should not gesticulate so vigorously. Leo, just calm down. Outside the United States or Canada area, you can use Skype and still call us. Website, I should mention website, is techguylabs.com. Yeah, we know a lot, actually, about the next version of Android, Android 7.0. Codename Android N. They've already released a version of it. I've been playing with it on my Nexus 6P and my Pixel C tablet. It's going to have some nice features. That's the next version of Android. Wednesday, we'll find out a little bit more about it. I don't expect to see it released until probably the fall. But Google does now pretty much yearly updates to Android. There's really only one question mark, is what does N stand for? You know, it's always a dessert. So the first, we don't know what A and B were. The first Android phone that came out, the HTC G1, many moons ago, was C, Android C, or Cupcake, followed by Donut. You're going to get hungry if I give you this whole list. Eclair. F was, don't remember, Froyo, frozen yogurt. Not so good. That's a good one to forget. G was gingerbread. H was honeycomb. I was ice cream sandwich, right? Then jelly bean. K, I'm doing this from memory, folks. Now give me a chance. K was Kit Kat. That was a really weird one because that's a commercial brand. And people were curious, did they license that from Nestle? How did that work out? And Google always said, well, no money is exchanged hands. I find that hard to believe. But a lot of people, myself included, I didn't like giving a plug to Kit Kat bars every time I mentioned Android, but that's how it was. Then Lollipop. We're currently at Marshmallow. So we know we're going to have some dessert with N. By the way, one of the things they do, which I love, at the Google campus in Mountain View, they have a little area where they bring out statues when they announce which dessert the next version of Android represents. They rolled out a statue of the Android robot holding a marshmallow, the last one. Now, I have somebody in the studio audience visiting us today from beautiful Dallas, Texas, who's wearing an Android shirt. What do you think N will stand for?
I don't
know. Now, remember that the guy in charge of Android said he wasn't, he said, I'm not telling you, N-U-T, I'm not telling you what N stands for. So some people have said, Nutella? I'm saying nut roll, but nobody likes that. I want it to be nut roll. Others are saying nougat. Nougat would make sense, but then why would he say I'm
Nutter butter?
I think we'll find out Wednesday. We should. This would be a good one for the Vegas bookies to have odds on. I'm not telling you. Sounds like Nutella, but that's another brand name, and I think they learned their lesson with Kit Kat. I don't know. I'm telling you, I like nut roll. I do. Jeff, Aliso Viejo, California, you're our next call. Hi, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had an old Toshiba with Windows 7 for a long time, and it just seemed to be getting slow. So I thought I'd get a new Dell with Windows 10, and everything was working good. Turned it on, set it up. But then first time it went to sleep, I tried to log back in and look for the password, and I put the password in, and it doesn't work. You know, I tried it again. It doesn't work. And I know I'm using the same password because it's always worked. So, but then I went to the restart button. I restarted it. The password works. So in the long story, if I shut it off or restart, the password works. But sleep, it doesn't work.
Okay. Here, I'll tell you. I know what's wrong, by the way.
Well, but I mean, I broke it worse than that now while I was just waiting to get through. When I was in sleep, I tried to wake it up, and I just put in a random password, and it worked.
What?
But now nothing will work. Now the password.
What the what?
On shutdown or
okay,
restart.
So here was my theory. Why shutdown didn't work, but restart did, is caps lock or num lock or scroll lock. So there's some lock keys on the keyboard. When you hit caps lock and you type in the password, when you created the password, I've done this. In fact, I just did this most recently yesterday on a new machine I was installing. I didn't realize caps lock was hit. I tried my password four or five times, and it wouldn't work. Then I thought, oh, and I hit caps lock, and it worked. Now, restart would, of course, reset the state of caps lock. So that would be one thing to suspect. But now I really feel that something might be more seriously wrong since you could enter a random password. It worked.
Well, one time, but then now I can't.
Now nothing will work. Yeah, what I would do is start over.
Well, I was just thinking it was brand new. I got it a week ago, so I was just going to return if it was like a hardware or a software deal. So I just think I'd get a new one. And it seems really slow, too. I thought, you know, I know it doesn't have a solid-state drive, but just, I mean, on startup takes like a minute for the first screen, and then when I would get in and put in the password, then the welcome comes up, and that seemed like, you know, another 35, 40 seconds.
Yeah, that might be Windows Hello looking for you. I really hate that. Okay. Does it get the camera go, I'm looking. I hate that thing. Turn that thing
off. It just has like the little, it has like my logo and then the computer name, and just, you know, it just says the welcome with the little dot spinning. And
yeah, no, it should be faster. Because Windows 10 is not, you know, for years, every version of Windows was slower. That stopped right around Windows Vista, Windows 7. And they've been faster. You know, 7 was faster than Vista, 8 was faster than 7, and 10 is faster than 8. They've improved the kind of the speed and the size, and they've so it shouldn't be slower. It should be faster.
Okay.
So either you bought a slower computer, or there really is something wrong with it.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, I went from an i3 to an i7, so I was expecting a big, you know.
You know what makes the bigger difference is this hard drive. Send it back and get a smaller but faster drive. Get an SSD, you know, the solid-state drives. Those, it turns out, the processors are all pretty fast. It's not the processor anymore. It's other things, in particular I.O., input output. So a faster hard drive, you'll notice the boot times will go down by a factor of 10. They'll be 10 times faster.
Solid state.
Yeah. Makes a huge difference.
Okay.
So,
and then would there be any way with my old...
I would send it back at this point because there's something flaky about it. It may just be software, but why not get another one?
Yeah, I mean, it's brand new. Would there be a way if I got a new one, could I, you know, go back to my, you know, my original backup disks from my window, my old machine and put that on, or would that be...
Well, you don't want to restore the operating system, but your data you do. So if you can do a restore that just restores a partial restore, or if you didn't back up the operating system and apps, what you can't restore is the apps and the operating system. You can restore all your data, though.
Well, I was trying to think if I could put, you know, the old 7 Windows program into the new computer.
Well, it's a different... So that Windows 7 was set up for the hardware on that computer, right? So what's going to happen, and the serial number, et cetera, it's going to be...
It's going to look for stuff.
It's going to be very confused about the whole thing. And it's you may survive. So, you know, sometimes deleting all the devices in the device manager and having it plug and play the new ones, you'll still have the problem with the serial number because it's associated with different hardware. I would just, you know, you're getting a free version of Windows 10. Windows 10 is better than 7. Take a little getting used to, but it is better. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. As long as you don't mind Microsoft spying on you. No, I'm just kidding. That is a weird password thing, huh? Then a random password, and that didn't, and that worked, and then nothing works, and it's weird. The GizWiz, Dick DiBartolo, coming up with his gadget pick of the week. But first, Isaac in West Covina, California. Hi, Isaac.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Great, great. I got a question for you.
Yes.
I'm a teacher, and my district is buying up a bunch of Chromebooks for the students to use inside
Yay!
Of our classroom.
I think that's the best choice for schools.
Yeah, it's really affordable, and Google gives us all these kind of apps to support us, Google Docs, Google Classroom.
Easy to manage. It's a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. But, you know, part of teaching is classroom management, you know, and so being able to monitor students, what they're doing, like perhaps from my PC or Chromebook that I have access to,
would
be great. I just don't know how to do that. I mean, currently right now, if I think a kid is up to something, I'm really just like, hey, can you raise it above your head and walk over to me right now?
That's a good idea. I like that.
Sometimes they close it, and because some of my teachers, you know, they're not tech savvy, I'm like, I'm just going to look through the history. What are you doing? Like, you know, and I catch them whatever they're doing. But I just want to wonder if there's a way that I...
Absolutely is.
Where I'm at.
Absolutely is. There are programs for this. I imagine Google has some support for it as well. Google, of course, wants, you know, they have a whole education program. But there are also third parties like Go Guardian. Thing is, I just don't want you to have to spend money on this. I know money's tight, but if you've got a grant, make sure they build this in. It lets you monitor in real time what your users are doing. There are other companies, though, that do this. Lots of companies, in fact, that do this. There's also something called Net Support School.
Net Support School. Cool.
Yeah, and it's at netsupportschool.com. They have a Chromebook extension that you could put on the Chromebook. They also support iOS and other devices. And because this is a huge and growing sector, Chromebooks now represent 21% of school purchases, and they're eclipsing even Microsoft Windows now, which is good because they're affordable, they're manageable, they're secure. Kids can't play Minecraft on them. there's you know, lots of reasons why this is a good idea. So I do I understand why you want a tool for this. All of them cost money, so it's a question of, you know, what you've got budget for. Do you have an IT department that's helping you with this?
Well, our district does have an IT department. We do have a tech guy on site, but he's kind of like, I'm in college, I'm doing my thing, and he's like everywhere doing his own thing. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they hired him and the chief basically to kind of support the teachers with little things.
Yeah.
When it comes to like big programs or try to look up specifics, they're busy kind of, I guess.
Well, and this is like the problem with a lot of these technology programs in schools. They get the budget for the device. They budget nothing for teacher training, for curriculum, or support. It's like, here.
I'm kind of the one coming up with curriculum to teach other teachers how to use Google Classroom and stuff like that. And this is one thing that's come up, is how can we monitor that? And I'm just trying to figure out, you know.
Well, there are solutions out there. And I know you called me not to tell you there are solutions, but which one I recommend them. I just don't have any experience with this. You know what it would be good to find, and I bet you there are such things, is a teacher resource online for Chromebook schools. You know, many school districts are going through what you're going through.
Yeah.
Very few school districts have the money to do the kind of training that they ought to do. So I would bet you that there are, when this happens, then people get together and they support each other. And I bet you that you could find teachers who are using Chromebooks in their curricula and ask them what they suggest. I like your solution, frankly. You know, we the high school I was on the board for some time of a local independent school, and they had a one-to-one program. Every kid entering the high school got a laptop.
Okay.
And the teachers do, you know, one teacher's policy was, you come in my classroom, you close your lid. You close it.
Okay.
And then other teachers have, I like your policy. Okay, put it up over your head so you can't change anything and bring it to me. Because when kids are up to no good. You know that. You can tell.
Yeah, I know. I know when they're up to no good, and it's like they're doing something else, and then they think, like, they could just hide the tab and I won't find it. And it's just like,
I know. At the same time, if you think about it, monitoring 30 kids in a classroom isn't easy either.
No, it's not. Trust me, I know, but it's something that I do on a daily basis. And
I know that's your job. That's part of your job. I mean, as much as your job is teaching, it's also policing. There's a site called ChalkUp. The chat room just passed me a link to ChalkUp.co.
ChalkUp,
like a chalkboard up. And here's Chromebook tips every teacher should know. So that would be. I'm going to guess there's a lot of tips like this. You know.
Okay.
All the different things. You know, some of these you already probably know, but you never know. One additional little handy thing might be really valuable to you.
Yeah. You know? I just thought maybe you knew something. And so just to recap, what were those programs you had mentioned?
I'll tell you what. We'll put a link in the chat. I mean, sorry, the website at techguylabs.com. But Net Support School.
Okay.
Net Support School is one of them. And the other one was, what was it, Carl? Guardian? Let me see if I can find it. I had it right in front of me. Go Guardian at goguardian.com. That's a monitoring, specifically a monitoring program.
Okay, goguardian.com.
Yeah, but again, I don't have any direct experience. Maybe there's some teachers listening who could call and let us know what they use.
I just needed some direction, and I'll go find something. You know?
Hey, bless you, Matt. You know, teachers are so valuable. They're so important. They're one of the most important jobs in our society, and they get so little support. And while I love the idea of seeing Chromebooks in schools, I see it all the time where there's just dumped on you. And like everything else, you spend your time, your resources to get it to work for your kids because you care. And thank you for doing that. I appreciate it.
Just got to make it happen. That's
you're making a huge difference, Matt. Thank you.
All right. Okay.
Take care.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Yeah, it broke my heart. We here in the little town we live in Petaluma, we had a Chromebook program. And somebody, you know, got seduced by the bright shiny, happens all the time, and got a grant for every kid to get an iPad. And it's just, I disagree with it. Every kid from kindergarten through 12th grade got an iPad. And that's bright and shiny, and it cost a lot of money. They could have bought twice as many Chromebooks, and they'd be much more functional, much more usable, and much better for the curriculum, if you ask me, in every grade. You know, I like iPads. Nothing wrong with them. I just don't think they're well designed for schools. And just ask the LA Unified School District, which spent, I think, $30 million on iPads and has now begun to sue Pearson, which gave them the curriculum, and Apple, which made the iPad, saying these were completely unsuitable. Money wasted. Money wasted. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, and he's in the right place and the right time. Dick D. Bartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, joins us every week at this time to give us his gadget of the week. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how are you, pal?
I am great, Mr. Gizwiz.
Well, it's spring. It's
yes.
May.
Yes.
It's boating season.
Oh, and by the way, I know you're a big boater.
I'm a big boater. I'm a big boater in a small boat. And every year I always get the Coast Guard inspection sticker.
Yeah.
And one of the requirements for that is you must have flares aboard. The flares have to be dated within the time of your inspection. And you need three of them. And when you buy them, they're about $35. And they're dated for 3 years. So every 3 years, you have to buy new flares. The bad thing is there's no way to get rid of them. On the package, it says, do not dispose. However, it says they are still good. Even though they're outdated, they're still good. Put them in your car, use them for emergencies. But so every 3 years, I have to make sure to buy new fuses. So I found out about the new electronic SOS flare, which starts out at a little under $100, but lasts forever. And there are several advantages to this. A flare will stay lit for maybe a minute or so. A little bit dangerous, actually, to if you hold flares incorrectly. The SOS electronic flare will stay lighted for up to 60 hours. It also floats. It also comes with a distress flag. And so between electronic flare and the distress flare, it meets all Coast Guard requirements.
Oh, nice. Who makes this?
Yeah. Weems and Plath, P-L-A-T-H.
Oh, Weems and Plath.
Yeah. Yes, actually, they make every... Oh, you never heard of them.
I never heard of them, no.
Okay, they make all kinds of marine equipment, high-end marine equipment. So this is their new and so far the only Coast Guard-approved distress flare that you'll never have to replace. All you do is replace the 3C batteries, which they recommend you do at the beginning of
I
every
might get get a couple of these for our segues, just in case.
There you go.
You know?
There you go.
You get on, you know.
Case drive off the
off the pier.
The turning basement. Yeah, the turning basement.
Yeah, you need one of these. Yeah.
And the great thing is the Segway will sink. You'll probably sink, but say, hey, you see that flashing
there
light
must
there?
Must be something down there.
Leo's under there.
$99, and these are Coast Guard approved.
Coast Guard approved.
Nice.
So it's great. And then you don't have to worry about what to... every time I see somebody say, hey, you want some flash for your car? I have like 24 of them.
So they last forever, but you still have to get new ones?
Yes.
That's weird.
It seems strange to me, doesn't it? That they must be... You have to replace them every 3 years, no matter what.
The magnesium lobby has gotten to the Coast Guard.
I think so.
We built these mines. So. Come on. You got to get more flares.
Yeah.
So these, actually, it's kind of cool. They call them the SOS distress flare because it blinks dit-dit-dit-dot-dot-dot-dit-dit-dit, right? It's the SOS.
Yes. Yeah. And it does it with light. It doesn't say those words.
It doesn't go dit-dit-dit.
They found that didn't work. They found that captains would go, what is that guy saying?
Dot-dot-dot-dash-dash-dash-dot-dot-dot.
Leave it to you to know it.
Well, I'm a, you know, registered ham.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You even registered. I knew you were a ham. I didn't know you were
a fine pork
registered.
Product, you bet. Uh-huh. You'll find Dick at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, gizwiz.biz. You can play the What the Heck Is It contest there. Win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. You also can find his podcast, the Gizwiz podcast, at gizwiz.tv. And I just think you must go hie thee hither and play the game. You also find a link to the SOS flare from whoever it is, Weenie and Burton, whatever it is. And there's other stuff, too, like the Shady Breeze chair and the Better Mouse Trap.
Lots of stuff. Lots of stuff.
Wow. I you know what? I'm sorry. I'm distracted by your website. It's got good stuff on it. Go there right now. Gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir. Talk to you later.
And
bye.
And we will see you next week. Just a couple of minutes left. Let's see if we can help Matt in Pasadena. Wait a minute. He's asking about carbonite. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt. No.
I'm Matt. You're Leo. No, wait a minute. You're Leo. I'm Matt. No, wait a minute. Hi.
Got it. thanks for taking this call.
Of course. What's up?
I have a carbonite, I guess, regular subscription on one computer. Backs up everything perfectly. I also have another one on my laptop. And with that, I have a 2 terabyte hard drive. So I got the backup of computer and backup of a separate external drive.
Yeah.
And the external drive is plugged into the computer. I've had it for about 2 months, and still everything isn't backed up yet.
Yeah, and think about that now. This is one thing and one of the reasons I say you should try before you buy. So it's using your upstream bandwidth to back this up. And by the way, it can't use it all or you wouldn't have any downstream if it clogged up your internets. So it's gently backing stuff up. If you have that much, I don't generally recommend a cloud backup for 2 terabytes. That's going to take, you can do the math, months. It's
okay.
Just that so much, right?
It is taking months.
Yeah, well, and that makes sense. So generally what I recommend is don't back up everything. Back up your data, the stuff that you can't replace. Applications, operating system, you can replace those easily. They're backed up in effect. The stuff that you make that you can't get a copy of, bookmarks, saved games, documents, emails, that's not going to be 2 terabytes. That might be 100 megabytes, thereabouts. Much more doable Because it can't, okay, well, you know, it's only using, especially on a laptop, you know, it's not all the time online. It's maybe on a slower connection at work, whatever. It's not going to be able to, you know, it's just think about it. It can't. What if you had to download 2 terabytes? That'd take a while, too. Well, it's much slower because it's uploading.
It's mostly photos. So
here's what I do. You know, A, you could live with it, and you say, well, I know it's going to take a few months. Once it's done, then it just backs up the changes, so that's not so bad. The other thing you might look at is there's lots of ways to back up photos for free. I use several other solutions for photos, like Google Photos. If you have an Amazon Prime account, they have unlimited storage. Flickr gives you 1 terabyte for free. In fact, I use several of them because I know photos I don't want to lose. You can go to photos.google.com and download. They have an automatic uploader. It'll do the same thing as Carbonite. In fact, it won't interfere with it, but they're going to be sharing the bandwidth, so it's going to take a long time too. But once you get it all backed up, then new photos every day. That's not a big deal. Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening, everybody. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on. And on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.